Call the meeting of the Energy Policy and Finance Division to order. If we do have a quorum present, the first order of business would be the approval of the minutes. Representative Welty, have you had an opportunity to review the minutes?
I have, Mr. Chair, and I move that they be approved as written.
Thank you. Representative Welty moves approval of the minutes from February 19th. Any additions and corrections? Seeing none, all those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? The minutes are approved. Representative Broad. House File 677. Welcome to the committee, Representative Broad. Please present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. House File 677 will essentially treat biodiesel facilities the same as ethanol facilities within the Jobs D zones, Mr. Chairman. And we've talked a lot about, and I know you and this committee have done yeoman's work in terms of renewable energy and renewable fuels, and this just moves us in that direction as well. As you know, Minnesota's been a strong leader, and I want to make sure that we're treating biodiesel facilities the same as ethanol facilities. I do have Mr. Chairman and committee members, Mike Youngerberg, with me today. He's with the Minnesota Soybean Growers Association, and he has a few comments as well.
Before you begin, Representative Broad, we need to have your bill before us. And frankly, it's my feeling that this is largely a tax issue rather than an issue for this committee. You observed correctly, I think, that everyone in this committee is has a commitment to renewable resources, and I think that the main consideration of this bill will have to be before the tax committee, and therefore, if you have no objection, the chair will move that your bill be moved to the tax committee without recommendation from this committee, because I don't think we really want to get into the tax questions.
Mr. Chairman, the way I view the role of this committee is essentially to say that biodiesel is on even par, speaking from a golfing standpoint, on even par with ethanol. And so I do think that the discussion is specifically a tax discussion. The fiscal note will be presented at that point as well.
Very well. Yes, Representative Western.
I guess I would be interested in passing it with recommendation, just because I think biodiesel is such an important part of our energy future. But would you consider letting us pass it with recommendation, at least so the tax committee doesn't feel that it was kind of neutral support that came out of this committee? That would be my...
I really don't have any objection to that, Representative Western. The reason that I thought maybe it should be without recommendation is so that the tax committee didn't think that we were making tax decisions for them. I wouldn't want to get on the wrong side of the tax committee at this point in the session, Representative Western. But if you want to,
I have a feeling, Mr. Chair, they'll do whatever they want, anyways. But I just think it would be a way to send a message that, you know, we haven't heard the bill yet, but I think we generally know what it's about. And
I have no problem with that, Representative Western. The chair will withdraw his motion, and Representative Western moves that House File 677 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. So, Now we have your bill before us, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Chairman and members, as a member of the Tax Committee, I will certainly communicate your concerns of not overstepping the bounds of the committee jurisdictions. Mr. Chairman, I do have again with me Mike Youngerberg with the Soybean Growers Association.
Mr. Youngerberg.
Mr. Chairman, Mike Youngerberg with the Minnesota Soybean Growers Association. The Minnesota Soybean Growers is a 300-member organization, and we wanted to present just our support for this piece of legislation as renewable energy and other technologies help us move to a better environment and less dependence on petroleum. We very much support this. We did hand out some information that would have been a PowerPoint presentation just for those who were maybe new to the word biodiesel, what it was, and some of those things. I guess the interesting part is on page 2 at the very top right, biodiesel demand in this country has expanded considerably in the last year, and I think one of the things that we want to commend this legislature for is back in 2002 actually putting in place a 2% biodiesel requirement that really did kickstart biodiesel production here in the state of Minnesota. And with that, we did have three biodiesel plants come online in Minnesota now. We do have some other ones that are talking about coming online that I think the legislation you're speaking to here may benefit. The current biodiesel production has benefited the state of Minnesota economically, as the handout that's going around from the Minnesota Department of Agriculture speaks to the importance of the economy and the number of jobs. And again, sir, we would gladly like to support this piece of legislation.
Thank you. Are there questions, members, for the testifier or for Representative Broad? Representative Kalin.
Just a quick question for our testifier. One of the things that I'm really interested in is making sure that we get the maximum output for the fuel input that we have, and I'm excited about biodiesel. I'm a strong advocate. My specific question is about waste heat recovery and cogeneration. I'm wondering if you can just speak real quickly about the potential in these biodiesel plants to generate some electricity off of the waste heat going up stacks.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, with biodiesel production, the existing plants we have are very efficient. There is very little waste of any kind that's generated. Most of it's all recycled within the facilities, but we do have a huge interest in using biodiesel as a fuel to power both the diesel generator sets as well as the new turbine technologies that are out there. So we're very much attuned with what you're saying, sir.
Great. Thank you.
Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As we've been hearing about ethanol in the Environment Committee, one of the concerns has been how much water does it take to make a gallon of ethanol, and how that affects the water in Minnesota, because the water that's being used is by and large drinking water. Help me out here. Does biodiesel, the manufacturer, I suppose, of it, take water as does corn ethanol?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Martinez, biodiesel production is very much less dependent on water. There is some that's used within the plant to wash the final product, but that is all recycled within the facility. The only real usage of water comes in probably the soybean processing. There's some water used there, but very minimal compared to other amounts.
Can I follow up?
Yes, Representative Wagenius.
I don't know what very minimal would be. How many gallons per year?
Youngerberg.
Madam, Mr. Chairman, Representative Wagenius, I'd have to have one of the people. I can follow up with you if that would be appropriate. I don't have that information in front of me right now.
And that would be helpful, because as people are getting benefits getting water as cheaply as we get it is a huge benefit. And so that would be very helpful. Just if you give it to the chairman, he shares.
Okay. Learned that in grade school. Mr. Andover. Further questions? Representative Western.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Youngerberg, two questions. Are you, as an organization, aware of other plants that maybe are even on the drawing board right now that would consider building in our state? And secondly, are soybeans and oil crops the primary source of biodiesel, or like ethanol, is there a next generation biodiesel that may be looked at someday? Is there another crop? Is there trees? Is there something else out there that scientists are looking at as another source of biodiesel, or is oil crops primarily the source for the foreseeable future?
Mr. Youngerberg.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Westrom, the handout that I provided, yes, we have identified probably about 5 biodiesel plant announcements in the state of Minnesota. Some are moving forward, particularly the ones in northwest Minnesota will probably be canola oil-based biodiesel. Since biodiesel can be produced from multiple oil stock, multiple oils such as corn oil, soybean oil, canola oil, can also be made from recycled oils. We have some companies who are much more interested in attaining recycled oil as well as animal fats products. So, and yes, sir, there are other crops being looked at. Coffea is one that's being looked at out in western Minnesota. There will certainly be other crops that will probably come online as well. Soybeans are working very hard to increase the oil content in our products. So I do believe that it'll take us won't be tomorrow, but we're working on it as quickly as possible.
Representative Broad.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Westrom, we'll make sure that we provide you a PowerPoint via email so that you have that at your fingertips.
Further questions? Representative Gardner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry I came in a little late. I actually had a constituent with an energy issue that I had to deal with. Is your plant the one that provides the B20 for the recycling trucks in St. Paul, that urethra recycling? I know they get bulk from one of the biodiesel operators.
Mr. Youngerberg.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, since I represent the Soybean Growers Association, we're more of the stakeholder in the production of the oil to supply the biodiesel plants, and I am almost certain we have one of the 3 plants in Minnesota is supplying the folks with urethra recycling. Good group.
Thank you.
Further questions? Seeing none, should ask, is there anyone here that wishes to testify for or against this bill? In that case, Representative Westrom renews his motion that House File 677 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Taxes. All those in favor of the motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion prevails. Bill is passed.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman? Mr. Chair?
Representative Norris.
Before you go on to the next order of business, I'd like to just call the members' attention to the fact that we have some visitors here. They are part of the Emerging Leadership Program, which is part of the Minnesota Extension Service. They've been visiting in St. Paul, and they're over in this area here. They can wave. They're all kind of dressed alike. Just wanted to welcome them. Thank you.
Thank you. Uh, The next order of business is the Department of Commerce.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Dennis Munkwitz. I'm the Chief Financial Officer at the Department of Commerce, and we're here to do a budget overview. Some of you may recall that we did a budget overview earlier. That was the same day that the governor's budget came out, and there was a lot of activity that day, and we covered a lot of material. So we're back here to try to walk through it again and give you the opportunity to ask additional questions. We had a good conversation last time, and expect we will today again. With me is Tim Janke, who's the finance director at the department. He'll be helping out if needed, but for the most part, I will walk through the presentation. At the end, we'll have the deputy commissioners from each division come up and talk about their change items. There may be questions on those. We have a lot of experts in the room from the department, so I would encourage anybody to ask questions along the way, and we can certainly get those answered for you, hopefully, today. So with that, I believe that everybody has a handout. I will start walking through that, and again, if you have questions along the way, just let me know. We did include copies of the change items as well. I know that last time we were here, I don't know that we had copies of those yet. The governor's budget was just fresh off the press at that point. So with that, I'll start. Our mission is to ensure equitable commercial and financial transactions in reliable utility services. And we do that through regulating and licensing businesses in over 20 industries. We investigate and resolve consumer complaints. We advocate on the public's behalf in front of the Public Utilities Commission. And we administer various state programs, including the Unclaimed Property Program, Weights and Measures, and the Petro Fund. We have about 313 FTEs in the department. The pie chart reflects the breakdown there. You can see the majority of those reside in three divisions: market assurance, energy and telecommunications, and financial exams. We expect in the next biennium that we may see our FTE count grow by 10. We do have change items in that would add 10 personnel, new personnel to the department. Take a look at our expenditures. Our total expenditures in the department for the next biennium are projected to be $334.5 million. The majority of those will be in the energy and telecommunications area. These are federal funds that are used for two programs in state government, the Low-Income Heating and Energy Assistance Program and a weatherization program that provides assistance to make improvements to folks' homes. So that's the majority of our spending. Market assurance spends about $20.9 million. Petro Fund is another large expenditure area, over $32 million. And we'll get into a little bit more detail about what these areas do as I go through. But this is just an overview of the total expenditures by the department. Moving on to the next page, you can see a breakdown of how we spend our money by fund. We have five major funds that we have funding from. Again, the majority of that, or 58%, you'll see is from federal funds for those two programs I mentioned. $53.9 million is general fund dollars for the other operations and market assurance, administration, et cetera. Petro Fund, again, at $32 million. Special revenue funds support the programs in weights and measures, the Telephone Access Minnesota program, and our insurance fraud unit. And then we have a small piece of money from the Workers' Compensation Fund, and that again is used in the insurance fraud area. Moving on to our revenues, as you can see, the department takes in quite a great deal of revenue for the state. We project for the next biennium we'll take in over $462 million. Again, a large chunk of that will be from the federal dollars that come forward, $56 million from special revenue funds, $213 million in revenue to the state's general fund, The box there shows the breakdown of that revenue. It's basically in four categories: unclaimed property, securities registration, licensing activity, and all other, which are just a few small revenue sources that we have in the department. If you look at the next slide, you'll see the difference, or you know what I was referring to, that we take in quite a large chunk of money for the state. You can see that we project that we will take in $462 million. $249 of that will be from the federal sources or special revenue sources. $213 million will go directly to the state's general fund. If you look at the expenditure graph there, you can see that we expect to get back in appropriations about $54 million, or about 25% of that general fund revenue. And we'll take in, or we'll expend about $280 million in the special the other funds. Okay, let's talk a little bit about the different divisions and programs at the department. First one I'll talk about is financial examinations. If you have any dealings with a bank or a credit union, have a mortgage on your home, chances are that you've been touched by the work that this area does. They license and maintain financial solvency of banks, credit unions, finance companies, insurance companies, and they also license a few other things like mortgage originators, check cashiers, payday lenders, and money transmitters. This division will expend about $19.5 million in the next biennium in the two major programs that they operate, the review of bank and credit unions and review of the insurance companies. You can see the breakdown there. Insurance companies will be about 55% of their expenditure, and banks and credit unions at 45%.
Mr. Pinequist, is it only state banks and credit unions that are examined by the department? Are you involved with national banks as well?
Mr. Chair and members, I believe it's just state banks and credit unions, and I'll look to Kevin Murphy. He's nodding yes, so
thank you.
I was accurate. The next slide shows the breakdown of how the expenditures are made in this division. There's a split of general fund as well as some special revenue funds that are used to support the activities in this division. And there's about 70 FTEs. The next
question from Representative Hackbar.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Maybe you could explain on this sheet, on the spreadsheet, what the change item is, residential mortgage lending reform. And what's that all about?
Mr. Chair, do you want us to cover that now or do it?
Or do you have a different spot in your presentation? Okay. I'm sorry.
We can certainly cover it now if you'd rather, but at the end of the presentation, we're going to have deputies.
Why don't you proceed, and Representative Hepburn will make sure that you cover that at some point.
And we'll have the expert up here at that point, Mr. Chair. So I'll move on then to the Petrol Fund. The Petrol Fund came into existence in 1987 and to date has reimbursed over $380 million towards petroleum storage tank owners for the cost of the cleanup, to reduce public health risks associated with leaks, and to remediate public leaks in a cost-effective manner. We've reimbursed over $12 million in fiscal year 6. I expect it will be at that same level for 7. And to date, we've served over 13,000 eligible applicants, and they've received reimbursement from the fund. The fund is funded via a special two cent fee or tax that's imposed. The Petrol Fund is a standalone fund in the state treasurer. Once the balance in that fund hits $4 million or goes below $4 million, this 2 cent tax kicks on for 4 months or blinks on for 4 months. Over the course of those 4 months, we expect that we collect on average about $24 million. And then usually it's a year later before we have to have that fund or that tax kick on again. So that's how the program is funded. It is a dedicated standalone fund. The expenditures for the program are mostly in the claims process that I described. Over $30 million we expect in the next biennium will be reimbursed to eligible applicants. There's a small piece that's appropriated as a direct appropriation for operating expenses, but the majority of the funding there is an open appropriation from the Petra Fund for the claims. And all, as I suggested, all of the expenditures for the Petro Fund program are made out of the Petro Fund, and you see that reflected on the next page, and they have 10.5 FTEs in that program. Moving on then to administration, we expect our expenditures for the next biennium to be about $10.6 million. And administration covers the areas you would expect, the routine HR, fiscal, commissioner's office, information. But we have a couple programs that are part of our administration division. The unclaimed property program that I previously mentioned will bring in about $98 million in the next biennium to the state's general fund. And we also have the Regulatory Information Center in there that really is the department's liaison with utility companies. All the filings that companies are required to do by law come into this center. They manage them via some electronic tools that we have in place. There's about 10 folks that work in that area. The next page shows a breakdown of the expenditures and the FTE counts by those areas that I just talked about. On average, as you can see, we expect there'll be about 49 employees in admin on the next biennium. Excuse me. I'll move on then to the Market Assurance Division. The purpose is to maintain public confidence in the financial services sectors, insurance, real estate, securities, franchising, and some other areas. The insurance fraud unit resides in this division. The next page, the expenditures, we expect will expend about $20.9 million in the next biennium. The majority of that through the insurance fraud and auto theft prevention program, some licensing, registration and analysis, enforcement support, and investigations will be at about $7 million. The next slide shows a breakdown. There is three funding sources for market assurance, mostly general fund. There are some special revenue funds in this division, and that would be for the insurance fraud unit I talked about and the auto theft prevention program. And the small piece of workers' comp money that I referred to earlier, that's spent in this division as well on insurance fraud. And we would expect to see about 89 FTEs in this division in the next biennium.
Mr. Munkus, what's the source of revenue in the special revenue fund?
Mr. Chair and members, two sources. Well, there's two sources. In insurance fraud, there's an assessment made annually to insurance companies to recover the costs of the insurance fraud program. This program was established 3-4 years ago, and the insurance companies agreed to this assessment. The insurance companies were very supportive of starting a program like this in the state as a way of reducing insurance fraud in Minnesota. So there is an annual assessment made that recovers all of the costs of the program. The second funding source for the auto theft prevention program is on every auto insurance policy renewal, there's a 50-cent surcharge that goes towards the funding of this program. On an annual basis, or a biennial basis, I should say, we collect a little over $6 million, I believe. We expend over $3 million on the actual program, you know, trying to prevent auto theft. And a balance of about $2.6 million on a biennial basis is transferred to the general fund.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I'll move on to energy and telecommunications then. The program exists to ensure that all Minnesotans have access to reliable, reasonably priced, and efficient, sound, economically responsible energy and telecommunication services. We accomplish that by overseeing the state's utilities, by representing the public in front of the PUC, and promoting reliable, low-cost, and environmentally superior energy systems and conservation. Again, Mr. Chair, this division spends almost 60% of our budget. Again, it's directly related to the federal funds that come in for the LIHEAP program and the State Energy Office or the Weatherization Program. We also have general fund dollars available for energy planning and advocacy in a small $2 million appropriation for the telecommunications regulation that we do. If you look at the breakdown there by expenditures by fund, again, you'll see that the majority of the money comes from the federal fund. Another piece comes from the special revenue fund, and that's for the program I'll talk about in a minute here, the telecommunications access program. That's a general fund for special revenue fund as well, and I'll talk about that funding source in a minute. Okay, the Telecommunication Access Minnesota program is designed to help folks that have to give access to telecommunications for folks with hearing, sight, speech, and mobility limitations. And we do this by providing specialized equipment for folks' homes, relay services, and providing outreach services as well. Moving on to the expenditure slide here, I'll talk a little bit more about the programs that this program covers. As you can see, there's 30% of their budget is spent on telephone equipment distribution. So this is providing equipment to folks for their homes that give them the necessary access to communicate via telephone with other folks. There's a relay service that we provide. There's a few new programs that have come about in the last year or so. There's a rural captioning, which provides rural TV companies some funds so they can do some closed captioning on some of their news broadcasts. The accessible news program is added in fiscal year 6. This allows folks that have vision impairment to, via their telephone, access news stories that they can dial in and listen to those stories over the telephone. So those are some new things that are being done in that program today. If there's no questions on that, I'll move on to Weights and Measures. Weights and Measures is a unique program in the state that resides at Commerce. The program provides Minnesota with a basis for physical measurement, standardization in mass, volume, length, and density. And we enforce the Minnesota Weights and Measures statutes. I'm sure everybody here has been touched by the work done in this program as well. If you ever use gasoline or if you ever buy purchase products from a deli or whatever in a store, those scales are tested routinely by the department here, as are the pumps at fuel stations. The Weights and Measures program is funded 100% general or special revenue fund. There's a $1 fee associated with every 1,000 gallons of gasoline sold in the state. And that dollar goes to two places. 81 cents of it goes into the special revenue fund where we then fund our program from, and the balance of that 19 cents goes to the state general fund for other purposes.
And that's when it's collected, not, I mean, as it's collected.
as it's collected. Yes, Mr. Chair. It's collected by the Department of Revenue as a tax, and then we're able to access 81 cents of it, and the balance remains in the general fund.
So, Mr. Marquis, the entire cost of the program is borne by the tax on gasoline?
Mr. Chair and members, yes, that's right. Up until, I think, 2 years ago, the majority or a good chunk of the program was funded from the general fund, but we dedicated an additional amount from that dollar to get weights and measures out of the general fund.
Mr. Marquis, can you tell us how much of the activity of the weights and measures division is actually dedicated to gasoline as opposed to, for instance, the scales in the deli or in grocery stores, whatever?
Mr. Chair and members, I can't, but Mark Buccelli is here with us, and he may be able to answer that.
Mr. Buccelli.
Mark Buccelli, Director of Weights and Measures. Mr. Chair and members, about 70% of that money would go to, comes from that 81 cents as far as testing gasoline and other petroleum products.
So, Mr. Buccelli, that is the major activity of the division on this.
That's correct.
Petroleum products.
That's correct, Chair.
Very good. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, with that, I've finished my piece, and we're ready to talk about the change items unless anybody else has questions.
Any questions at this time, Representative Wiggins?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Let me put it this way. When the governor spoke to us earlier this year, he said, measure us by the results that we provide. And I don't see results in here. I see inputs, and I see goals or purposes, but I don't see any results. So I'm going to give you an example of one that this committee is probably particularly concerned about, where you, on page 10 at the bottom, it says promote energy conservation. I mean, that's at the very bottom of the page. So how much energy conservation have we actually gotten with the last budget, and how much do you expect to get with this new budget? I mean, that's results, and that's what we're looking for, I think. I think that's what the governor told us to look for.
Mr. Chair and members, I'm not sure that I can answer that adequately. I would look to Edward Garvey, perhaps, to tackle that one.
Well, he can anticipate that question when we get him to the table then, Mr. Mike.
All right. He'll be here very soon.
You hope.
Mr. Chair, was there? I thought there was one more question. No?
Well, in general...
Representative Wiggins.
In general, I think it would be helpful to have specific results that we can say, well, these are the results we want versus maybe something else, and that we want more results in one area rather than in another area. So it's very hard to see what's good and what's not good.
Right.
Or not that's not good, but it's what has been effective for Minnesotans without seeing what the results are.
Mr. Chair and Representative Wiggins, we certainly can get that data. We have it in-house. We just hadn't thought about providing that. So we can certainly get that to the committee.
Thank you.
Any further questions at this time? Mr. Marquis, change items?
Yeah.
Mr. Chair and members, I'll talk about the first change item. I'm sure that you're aware that the governor has included a 2% compensation adjustment in all of the agency's budgets. This change item would increase our budget by just over $1 million for the biennium. We also have the ability to recover several of the costs that we incur in the department. So by incurring the additional $1.8 million in expenditure costs, we have the ability to collect about $200,000 of that back. We have the ability to recover a lot of our costs in the Energy and Telecommunication Regulation Division, as well as the Financial Exams Division. By statute, Financial Exams recovers 103% of their costs, and on average, Energy and Telecommunications is able to recover about 97% of their costs. So we're unique in that respect, that we would be able to recover significant chunk of the compensation adjustment. There's a table there that shows the breakdown by division. I won't go into detail there, but if there's no questions on that change item, then I'll ask Pat Nelson, the Deputy Commissioner for Market Assurance, to come down and walk through his change items.
Good afternoon, members. For the record, my name is Patrick Nelson. I'm a deputy commissioner at the Department of Commerce. The change item before you from my division is pretty straightforward. We're asking to add seven investigators to the division at a cost of $600,000. The money would come from increasing the cap on the mutual fund fee that we currently collect. It's currently capped at $25 million. We would propose to raise the cap to $25.6 million. The investigators would be used in two units. Three would be assigned to my real estate unit. As you've been reading, nationally and here in Minnesota, the real estate area has had significant growth of fraudulent activity. For example, there was an article from The Economist in yesterday's paper that talked about the rot in the subprime mortgage area and how a lot of the companies are now charging off and merging because the foreclosure rates and the payback rates on the exotic mortgages that were in our marketplace and also the national marketplace are failing at a much higher rate than they had anticipated. So we just have a lot more work in that area. The second...
Mr. Nelson, I think Representative Poppy has a question.
Quick question. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Nelson, was that in yesterday's Minneapolis paper, St. Paul paper, Wall Street Journal?
Mr. Chairman, Representative
Nelson,
it was in the Minneapolis paper.
Thank you.
In the world comment section. Mr. Chairman, okay. The second segment of this change item would be adding four investigators to start a new multidisciplinary investigative unit specializing in fraud against senior citizens. As we are all aware, there's boomers are coming to that age. They have significant resources as a group. Fraud in this area is particularly harsh because they don't have any time to recover if they're defrauded. So we're trying to develop some expertise so that maybe we can get out ahead of what we predict will be a virile area for people trying to defraud and take people's financial resources. So in a nutshell, that's the proposal, Mr. Chairman.
Nelson, I see that you, in essence, are proposing to raise the $600,000 needed for that change item by raising the cap. Can you tell us how much typically is distributed when that is collected above the cap?
Mr. Chairman, yes. I think currently the cap, we're thinking it's going to raise about $32 million. So that would be $7 million. And currently we distribute it after the fiscal year, and it's actually a difficult program for us to give money back because a lot of the money is filed.
It's always difficult.
Right. The money is filed by third-party services, too, in particular. So we don't necessarily know which mutual fund has sent us money. So we end up sending it back, and we trust to some degree that they get it back to the appropriate customer of theirs. But it's actually a time-intensive function for us to return this money.
And then if we go on to the next item with the $400,000 increase, how is that being funded?
That would be from Deputy Commissioner Murphy's area, so I'll have him come up.
Perhaps I should ask, are there further questions for Commissioner Nelson? I'm sorry, Representative Welty.
Thank you, Chairman Hilty. And to Commissioner Nelson, I just have one question about your change item and hiring, I believe, 7 new staff. In here, I'm just looking at the line that says that these resources, and it's on page 24, it says these resources are needed to get ahead of a potentially growing problem. So my question is, if you put resources on the ground and some of it does not come to fruition, what are the staff that you hire on going to do then? You know, you're kind of saying that it's going to go to market assurance and you're going to go into more investigation, but I'm just wondering, you know, if it doesn't come to fruition, where are these staff going to go?
Mr. Nelson?
Mr. Chairman, we have a fairly heavy workload now. We do not turn anybody away. I want to make it clear, it's not that we're going to add new responsibilities, but I think what this will do is we'll develop some expertise in areas that we are already working in toward a particular segment of the population to try and better understand how they are being defrauded, and then maybe have some further proposals in subsequent years about law changes to maybe head some of that off. For example, we know that there's some stuff going on in annuities relative to having dinners and, you know, kind of, I wouldn't call them boiler room type operations, but pressure sales to get them to transfer out and buy annuities. And there's some suitability questions, not for everybody, but for some of the purchasers of this. Now, when they call us now with a problem like that, saying they got into an annuity that they now need money out of it and there's high surrender penalties, we'll still take the case. We're not turning anybody away. But in this way, those kinds of operations that are particularly targeted to this segment of the population, I think we want to develop a better handle for. But if it doesn't come to fruition, to answer your question, there's plenty of other work in the division that they could be accomplished. For example, like right now in my real estate area, the what's happening in real estate is sort of a new type of activity. Real estate historically had been sort of small, one of, you know, my realtor didn't provide me the disclosure that was required, and I found out later that, you know, this was wrong with the house. So we had enough staff to manage sort of the one-off type problems. Well, now the problems we're seeing in real estate are systemic to there being a lot of money provided for the subprime mortgage area. Well, when there's a lot of money provided, it attracts financial criminals. So we're seeing a different type of problem in the real estate area. Well, I shifted a couple of people into that area, and also we brought in some of the people that do investigations for the insurance, the market conduct team, because we could get at some of it with title insurance. So we're using the title insurance nexus to the real estate problem to bring some more resources to bear on the real estate issue. But it seems like that, you know, financial crime moves to different areas, and so I can almost guarantee you that these people will have plenty to do, even if it doesn't come to fruition that the seniors are being more directly affected than the population as a whole.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Commissioner Nelson, for providing some more specific details about where the dollars will go. Appreciate it. Sounds like you're doing good work.
Further questions for Mr. Nelson? Thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, the members. Kevin Murphy, Deputy Commissioner of the Financial Examinations Division. My division deals with banks, credit unions, finance companies, and the solvency part of insurance regulation. We also license mortgage originators under Chapter 58. And we have an initiative this year to strengthen regulation of the mortgage industry, and part of that effort would be to hire 3 new people to do examinations of mortgage companies, and we would charge the companies for the examination. So that's what our $400,000 increase is for in the change item.
And so, Mr. Murphy, the cost of hiring these people would be recovered from the fees that they generate. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, that is correct.
And Commissioner Murphy, are you finding similar trends in this area of activity as Commissioner Nelson described in just a few moments ago?
Mr. Chairman, the impression that we get is that fraud is rampant in the mortgage industry, especially the subprime area.
Representative Hackford.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I think the Attorney General has some kind of a plan. I haven't seen a bill, but I think the Attorney General's office has stated that they want to do something in this area, too. Do you have any idea what that's all about, and are you working together on that? This is not part of that plan, I don't believe. Or maybe you could elaborate on that some.
Commissioner Murphy.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Durk. Several questions there. I'll try to touch all of them.
Okay.
the bill that you'll probably be seeing from the department concerning mortgage regulation will include a change in the licensing structure. The way it works now, we license mortgage companies and we license individuals who operate as independent contractors. And what's happened is we have a lot of people in that business that probably shouldn't be there for one reason or another. Going forward, we would propose to just license business entities. We would have a substantial net worth requirement for those licensees. We would have mandatory educational training for loan officers. Commerce Department would have authority to examine those entities and charge for the examinations. We would also make mortgage fraud a specific crime in Minnesota. So our bill is aimed at the structure of the industry and the licensing part of it, and the benefits to the consumer would be more indirect, because consumers get caught up in all these bad things also. From what I've read about the Attorney General's bill is they're coming at it more from the consumer protection side of it, and actually some of the things that they're proposing we had unsuccessfully proposed several years back. So I would think that these two efforts would fit together at some point. I don't think it's an either or. I think they're complementary, and I think good ideas in both of those initiatives.
Okay.
I have not seen the final proposal from the Attorney General's office yet, sir.
Thank you. I'm curious to see that, but thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Wilkins.
Thank you. You noted that you were going to have make mortgage fraud a specific crime, and I'm not troubled by that, but it does seem to me that to the extent we can, we should be trying to recoup people's money if they've been defrauded, and that a civil procedure might be easier to do or an administrative procedure. Because the burden of proof is not beyond a reasonable doubt. It's something less than that, and you might have more success in recouping money for folks, which is what I would assume your intention is.
Mr. Murphy.
Mr. Chairman, Representative. One of the initiatives, I believe, in the Attorney General's effort is to give consumers a specific right of action against a lender and also against an appraiser. And I think both of those are very good ideas, which would get to your issue.
Okay.
Representative Wagenius.
So that's a civil right of action is what you're talking about?
Yes, Mayor Murphy.
Mr. Chairman, Representative.
Okay.
Further questions? Thank you, Commissioner.
He has one more. He has one small, minor, other things item. Mr. Chairman, we have a 20,000 item related to credit service organizations. So these are...
Sorry to overlook that.
These are organizations that are licensed by the department and they're in the business of helping people to restore or improve their credit ratings and credit scores. The licensing process is rather cumbersome. We currently charge them $100 to license them. We spend a lot more looking at the application, so I'm trying to break even on the amount of effort that we spend for licensing these entities. But it's de minimis item and just a handful of these operating.
Seeing no further questions, thank you once again. I think we're done this time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, that leaves our energy and telecom change items. I believe Mr. Garvey will be joining us.
Mr. Garvey, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Edward Garvey. I work for the Minnesota Department of Commerce. It's an honor once again to be here to address you and specifically to walk through three budgetary change items. The three budgetary change items that I want to sort of talk to you about are from the Governor's Next Generation Energy Initiative, which this committee and its other considerations have already been sort of working on. But just to sort of put this in a larger context, the Governor's Next Generation Energy Initiative had the three parts, more renewables, more efficiency, less carbon. Of course, this committee just the other day passed what can only be characterized as landmark, nation-leading renewables legislation, something that I'm very proud to be a part of, and I'm very hope that you are too as a committee and as a body. And thank you very, very much for doing that.
Thank you.
The change items in deal with another part of the more renewables component, because when we speak about renewable energy from the government perspective, we think about it not only in the electricity perspective, but we also think about it in the setting of transportation fuels perspective. And so the one change item, and this is a general fund request of $12 million one-time money for E85 everywhere pumps. This would be a allocation to the Department of Commerce to give grants to allow service stations, approximately an additional 1,500 service stations, to install E85 pumps. With the 300 E85 pumps that we have today, that would be about 1,800 E85 pumps distributed across the state, approximately a little bit more than half, and we believe that that's enough stations to really make it a very, very convenient and accessible fuel to the people of Minnesota across the state. But to do that, we think we need to continue helping those service stations bear some of the cost of installing those E85 pumps. And so the one change item, the $12 million in FY08, would be for that program, the E85 Everywhere program.
Commissioner, regarding that program, what would you anticipate regarding geographic distribution? Do you have plans for encouraging equal distribution across the state, or how would that be dealt with in the actual administration of the program?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I mean, we've been sort of looking at that and at that question and trying to sort of figure that out, because on one hand, you got to go where the gas stations are and where the gas station owners and operators that want to pursue it are. What we have found, candidly, is that just by self-selection over the past couple of years, that they have distributed themselves relatively well over the state, the 300 that we have. Having said that, clearly there are spots where there just aren't E85 pumps. There aren't many, for example, in my hometown of St. Paul. There are some in other areas, particularly when you move out southwest and south central Minnesota. But so our figure is basically just start with who wants to do this, provide them the assistance. As we start getting more pumps out there, we'll start putting them on the map, which we already have, and I think this committee has already heard from Tim Gerlach that we already have that map, then you sort of see distribution. We'll start being more selective and more targeting of where we want to do that. If we see that there's fewer stations than appropriate up in northwestern Minnesota or northeastern Minnesota, we would sort of probably spend a little bit of time and effort to talk with those service station owners and operators and urging them to take advantage of the grant money.
And if the converse were true, Commissioner, and you had more applicants in a given area than you felt were justified according to the distribution of the population or demand, what would you do then?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, we've had an operating rule where we wouldn't provide a grant to a service station within, I think it was a mile, maybe 2 miles, of another service station that had already received the grant. And we've been pretty good about sort of enforcing that policy. But yet, there have been instances where enforcing that policy wasn't necessarily a reasonable thing to do. And we sort of looked at it. I mean, for example, in Pearl, I mean, when you have a small community and you only have a couple gas stations and they're relatively close on the main street, saying one gets E85 and the other one doesn't is sort of not necessarily the best approach thing. So we sort of looked at that being flexible in that approach. Having said that, if we start seeing a huge concentration, we'd be willing to probably look at that. But gas stations are competitors, and if one gas station is offering a service station and the other can't, and they still want to, and they still think they can make money and still provide services to people in Minnesota, you know, I would have to sort of basically sort of balance the competing interests there. It may also be, you know, very candid, Mr. Chairman, that the grant would be mostly handled and operated through the American Lung Association, who would be the agent that we would be working with in doing this. Most of this work would not be done by the Department of Commerce. We would be the conduit of the money to the American Lung Association, who's been the primary grantor, if you will, of the funds that have been allocated over the last several years. So they're the ones that actually would be doing most of this analysis. I'm just giving you some of the discussions that we've had with them on the topics that you've asked about.
Thank you. Representative Saylor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioner Garvey. I appreciate the efforts that the department is planning to go through to increase the number of pumps of E85, but as we're trying to encourage use of this fuel in the state, we also have a problem with the fact that there aren't a lot of vehicles out there that can use this. I would like to know what your plans are for, as a department, for helping with conversion kits. I mean, it's not exactly that you can tell Ford that they, or somebody, that they should make a lot more, although I hope that that has been done as well. But I would like to know about conversion kits and what role you plan to have in making that more available to the citizens of Minnesota.
Commissioner Garvey.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Representative Saylor. Ethanol is one of those topics where there are multiple agencies that are actually working together to encourage this policy. The Department of Agriculture is involved. We're involved in the specific setting of the 85 pumps, and the Pollution Control Agency is also involved. The Pollution Control Agency is involved in two ways. They're involved in, first is to implement and work through the implementation of the E20 legislation that was adopted a couple of years ago. The second one, and this is specifically to the topic that you brought up, Representative Saylor, is the conversion kits. There is a currently a federal prohibition implemented by the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency that limits the conversion of vehicles to be able to use the 85. The Department, the Pollution Control Agency, has been working with the U.S. EPA trying to convince them that that is not necessarily the best policy, and if that we would be happy to be a state that would test that. Secondly, and most importantly, Governor Pawlenty will be in Washington, D.C. next week and is expecting to speak with the U.S. EPA administrator on this very issue, reiterating our belief that the conversion kits is an appropriate tool for us to use and that we should be able to use them. So my answer is that the Department of Commerce is not the lead agency on the kit issue. The Pollution Control Agency is. And you may want to, I will ask them to circle back with you, Representative Saylor, to give you a firmer details on what they're actually working on.
Representative Saylor.
I just have one follow-up. And granted, be that as it may, I'm just wondering what kinds of plans you may be trying to put into your work plan for the future, assuming that we do make some sort of conversion kits available and things with the PCA and the federal government move ahead. Are you planning for that sort of eventuality within your department?
Mr. Chairman.
Commissioner Garvey.
Representative Saylor. The administration's position and activities on ethanol have taken three simultaneous approaches. First is the one that brought us to this topic here is the promotion of E85 pumps and the accessibility of that fuel. Another is, and that's that we, the Department of Commerce, are the lead on. Another is the production of ethanol as a fuel itself. And the Department of Agriculture is the lead on that. And other budget offers of the government's next generation energy is the promotion of cellulosic ethanol and those kind of things. The third is the E20 and the fuel kit, the kit conversions that you mentioned. These three agencies and others are working together routinely across purposes, across territories and across jurisdictions and across facilities to promote ethanol across the world. Because we need, at the end of the day, we need, and I should actually throw in the Department of Economics, Employment and Economic Development, because they actually have been working in communication with the auto dealers to encourage them to produce more E85 vehicles themselves. Because we do, as you said, we need to be able to produce more ethanol, we need to make it more accessible, and we need to have more vehicles that can use E85.
Representative Western.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To Representative Saylor's comments, I would agree, Representative Saylor, with the conversion kits. It helps solve the problem of do we have enough cars to meet the supply of 1,500 E85 stations, and I'd like the answer to be yes for both of them. Commissioner Garvey, you said the governor's going out to talk to, part of his trip will include talking to the EPA. Let me send you another message for him to tell the EPA, and that is along with the conversion kits, also get rid of their antiquated law that doesn't allow blending pumps to be installed in our state or nation, because I think that's the similar type of outcome that I don't believe the law intends to have, but it seemingly it does have that effect. And so it's a bill that you've maybe seen I have introduced. It's in Representative Otremba's committee right now. Hopefully we can get a hearing on it. But we do have some laws in Minnesota that actually would prohibit blending pumps, and I believe probably prohibit conversion kits if we don't fix them. So when the EPA gets their act together, I sure wouldn't want Minnesota law to be contrary to getting that done. And so my bill would fix Minnesota law, so in the event there's a waiver or the EPA changes their position or the rules, our laws would be set so they could be installed and we could use blending pumps. And then we also add to the opportunity to have more distribution points. And so I would just ask you to have the governor push the EPA on the blending pump issue as well, because that is a growing issue and just as ridiculous as the conversion kits not being allowed. So I guess you can comment on your position of that and what we can do to help your agency achieve that.
Commissioner Garvey. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Representative Wessom, thank you. I will for refreshing my recollection on that issue, and I will bring that to the governor's attention before he leaves for Washington.
All right.
Representative Welty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question. Minnesota State University Mankato is working on the conversion kit. Do they currently have the technology in place? I mean, have they developed the conversion kit? So is it a fact that we're just waiting on the MPCA, or are they still working on the technology? That's my question. Thanks.
Mr. Garvin.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Representative Welty, as you were speaking, I was looking at Assistant Commissioner Mike Bull, and he was listening to your question attentively, and then when you got to the part where you said, are we just waiting on the US EPA, he nodded his head affirmatively. And I interpret that as being, yes, we have the technology, and yes, all we need is US EPA's approval.
Thank you, Commissioner, and Assistant Commissioner Bull. Commissioner Garvey, with regard to the E85 Everywhere initiative, we're proposing to add five times as many E85 pumps as we have currently. If that resulted in five times the demand for ethanol that we have currently, would we be capable of meeting that demand?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, yes, we would.
Commissioner, where is the ethanol that would meet that demand going now?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, that question is best answered by representatives of the Department of Agriculture, because they are the lead agency in the development of the ethanol production in the state. The reason I can say with certainty that the answer to your first question as to the supply itself is that the 1,500 additional E85 pumps that we would fund and install with the E85 Everywhere governor's budget proposal that's before you, if and we assume that this is the case, that they would dispense E85 at the same amount, if not more, than they are currently dispensing. That would approximately be the amount that would actually be dispensed if we were at an E20 requirement, which we also believe we should obtain, and we know we can achieve that too. So those numbers are linked. And that's why I can say with some certainty that the U.S. That the Department of Agriculture has concluded that we can supply 20% ethanol with the supplies that we have and the supplies that we expect to be produced in the coming years.
Well, Commissioner, it's my understanding that currently much of the methanol that's produced in Minnesota is being shipped to, I believe, California and New York, or at least in those general directions. There isn't anything that would guarantee that that would practice would not continue as long as the price in California or New York were slightly higher than in Minnesota. Is that not correct?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, those are the kinds of questions that would be best answered by the Department of Agriculture, since they have a much better sense of what's of where our ethanol production is, where it's going, and where it will be.
Well, Commissioner, I can't believe that you would not have considered any of these things and thinking that it's a good idea to spread 1,500 additional pumps all over the state.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, we believe that there will be an adequate supply of ethanol at a reasonable price to provide and fill and dispense the needed and desired fuel from those E85 pumps.
Thank you for that assurance, Commissioner. I'm going to go on to the next item.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. On to areas where I am, will give you an equal amount of assurances.
We'll just take that as a given, Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the second budget change item that I want to address, we refer to as 25 by 25 grants. Consistent with the governor's Next Generation Energy Initiative policies, we do seek to obtain 25% of our energy from renewable energy sources by the year 2025. Again, that should come from, when we think about energy and we think about from renewable energy, we not only think about the electricity sector, but we're thinking of it from all energy sectors. And there are a number of ways that we think deserve funding for that. And so the governor has recommended in each of the next 2 years of the biennium $2.5 million from the XL Energy Renewable Development Fund for a total of $5 million from that fund for the next biennium for what we refer to as 25 by 25 grants. We are recommending our language that we will be putting forward would allocate 500 of those, of that amount on an annual basis in each year in capital grants for methane digester capital grants, $500,000 in each of the next 2 years to continue the state's award-winning solar rebate program, $5,000 in each of the next 2 years for continued funding of the community energy technical assistance and outreach, the CERTS programs, and then $1 million per year as a placeholder for plug-in hybrid electric vehicle demonstration projects and research. And on that last item, I am vice chair of the legislative committee looking at how to create demonstration projects and implement plug-in hybrid electric vehicles. We've been meeting every other Friday, a group of about 10 of us, 12 of us, at the Union Hall across from the Ford plant in St. Paul, and we'll be bringing to the committee in the next several weeks a list of ideas to be more concretely put in under this category that I just mentioned. But again, those are 25 by 25 grants, $2.5 million for each of the 2 years of next biennium.
Commissioner, I do have a question about the Renewable Development Fund, but since the next item is dealing with that as well. Perhaps we should just proceed to that first. If there are no other questions at this point.
The third change item, Mr. Chairman, is something that we're referring to as the Next Gen Energy Research. We believe that the E85 Everywhere program, the 25 by 25 grants, are continuing ongoing programs, but that we also need basic and applied research to be done at our institutions of higher learning on energy and renewable energy ideas and applications. The governor is recommending that $5 million in each of the next 2 years of the biennium for a total of $10 million be allocated from the XL Energy Renewable Development Fund for grants to be made to our institutions of higher learning, the University of Minnesota's IRE program, the MINSCU program, or AURI, the Agricultural Utilization Research Institute, or other worthy research entities for the kind of work that I just referred to, research on projects that take sort of academic thinking to explore the nuances and to bring them to market and that kind of thing. The money would be distributed to the Department of Commerce. I would be working with, Commissioner Wilson would be working with the commissioner from the Pollution Control Agency, as well as the Commissioner Hugesson from the Department of Agriculture, to assess the grant applications from these institutions on what they would spend with money, and then we'd issue the grants in block grant form to the institutions.
Commissioner, could you give the committee a little background on the composition and previous activities of the Renewable Development Fund Board?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the Renewable Development Fund Board is a board of 5 members made up of representatives from XL, the environmental group, environmental community, a business interest, and a member from, a representative from the Midwakanton Sioux community located near Prairie Island, the Prairie Island facility. The fund was originally established a while ago and reconstituted in 2003 to a annual single contribution from XL of $16 million a year. That money has been allocated on a grant basis by the Renewable Development Fund with the oversight of the Public Utilities Commission and comment from my staff, as well as from direct appropriations from legislative actions and laws that legislation that the governor has signed. It has been given for whole sorts of grants, but it has also been used to fund IRE at the University of Minnesota, the Initiative for Renewable Energy and the Environment, IRREE. I'm sorry if I used the acronym. It's been used to fund the Renewable Energy Production Incentive for small wind projects. It's been used to give grants in large scale and small scale. It's contributed funds to the Excelsior Energy project, as well as to projects of research and development and implementation of other kinds of demonstration projects across the spectrum, of all devoted to renewable energy, mostly on the electricity side, but has also been looking at some non-electricity renewables.
And so, Commissioner, how would the proposals here, the $5 million in the 25 by 25 grants and the $10 million in the energy research proposal, how would that impact the activity of the ongoing activity of the Renewable Development Fund Board?
Mr. Chairman, it would just fit perfectly, sir.
We'd be happy if you'd expand on that a little bit.
Renewable energy, the RDF, the Renewable Development Fund, has a set of funds that it is actually in the process of issuing an RFP for. That would seek grant applications. It's under order from the Public Utilities Commission to do that. It gets funds additionally in each year, as I indicated, $16 million a year. So clearly the question that you're asking is how do these two proposals completely sync up? We do need to sort of make sure that they sync up well.
Make sure that one doesn't sync the other is what I was getting at, I think.
Correct, Mr. Chairman. It may be worth the committee's while to hear from the Renewable Development Fund to get a more specific outline of what they have funded and where their funding proposals are.
Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to go back to the question of results, and the question didn't get answered before, so I'm hoping if you can't give an answer now about your conservation results over the last 2 years and what you expect to be your conservation results under this budget. So I know that's maybe not a question you anticipated, so if you just give it to the chair, he is good about sharing what he gets, if that would be okay with you, Mr. Chair.
Certainly.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Representative Wagenius, since you asked that question, Dennis Lundquist has been doing a bunch of research, and I'm sure he can answer that now.
Well, I was wrong.
I do have actually an answer, and it may be a complete answer, but if it's not, we would certainly be happy to provide the chair and you, Representative Wagenius, some information on that. The Conservation Improvement Program, which we provide regulatory oversight for the utilities, in 2006, we saved 417 million kilowatt hours of electricity and 1.33 billion cubic feet of natural gas. That's in last calendar year. We will do that again, if not more, in 2007. We are also hoping to change in that specific program the paradigm to move from a spending program to a savings program. That is an issue I believe that this committee will be taking up, and Representative Palin is taking the lead and working with you, Mr. Chairman, on. And that what we hope to do is actually make a springboard in much more success in our energy savings, both at the department, but more importantly, as a department working with the utilities that we oversee.
Representative Gaines.
Okay. Numbers without context is just doesn't have any meaning. So I think what would be helpful if you could show how out of how much and the rate of growth and how much you have shaved off that rate of growth by your activities. I think that's the right way to show it. Okay. Am I correct about that?
Commissioner Garvey.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wagenius, actually I have a presentation that I'm preparing for when the committee talks about the energy efficiency bill that has that information. Unfortunately, that file is back in my office, so I have that information, and I look forward to be able to share it with you.
Appreciate that, Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, just a very quick follow-up. I know we want to get back and rolling here. Commissioner Garvey, you and I are in close consultation on this very question, and it's kind of the crux of it. But it does raise the budget. Mr. Soderbergh gave us some pretty thorough line item information in terms of general fund recommendations, and I just have a question. You need not answer it now, but for us to chew on, is the question of the capacity for technical assistance to get to the resources that we need to vis-a-vis SIP and other And I just wanted to raise that publicly so we can continue to talk about it, and that this committee has already discussed a couple of times this week about making sure you have the resources to get the job done, so we have the numbers that we can have the trust, the public confidence that we're doing a good job with it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Peel.
Representative Brunner.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Garvey, Commissioner Garvey, sir. This question you may not totally be able to answer, but I want to raise this because I'd appreciate your comment, and I think it's something that we need to reflect on. It's clear that the source of these grant funds or the amount is determined by the funds they're coming from. But my concern is more... was any thought given to the proportionality of the grant needs in terms of the goals and needs that we see as a state for the whole renewable energy conservation movement? And that's my concern is, are we being too short-sighted and narrow-minded in the grant and the research opportunities that we're supporting if we don't look more broadly at what kind of research opportunities will be necessary to meet the needs we see 10 years down the line, 20 years down the line, and do we need some sort of a cost-benefit analysis, if you will, to determine what our research target ought to be?
Commissioner Garvey?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Representative Brunner, those are important questions. They're questions that we've been struggling and working through in ourselves in development of the governor's budget. We think we've come up with an answer to that, and we look forward to working with you and the other members of the committee to find a satisfactory answer that works for all of us.
Well, that sounded like a really good concluding statement.
I'll give you the assurance of the vet.
So, members, if there are no further questions, we do have a full agenda for Monday. I was going to go over it, but you can read that in the emails, and this meeting is adjourned.